Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Hi, this is a podcast from Historic Glenbrook, and I'm Peter Hill, and I'm here with the president of the Glenbrook Historical Society, Dennis. Do you want to say hello, Dennis?
Hello.
He's there, and we're here with a Glenbrook legend, Tim Myers. How old are you, Tim, at the moment?
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody.
How old are you, Tim?
89.
He's 89 and absolutely sprightly and remembers everything. And Tim's going to talk with us about World War II time in Australia. And this is for an international audience because it goes around the world. We're in Sydney, Australia, in the Blue Mountains. And even though we're up in the Blue Mountains, there was a war fever and everyone had to black out and stuff like that. And Tim, you were in
dispatch rider.
And so what was the dispatch rider?
Dispatch bike rider to take messages around.
So up in Glenbrook was a little hive of activity. We had a gas warfare unit here.
Is that right? Yeah, you can speak.
Gas warfare.
We had the
tunnel. No, there was none of that then.
Okay.
I'm wrong. But Tim's...
A bit later.
Tim will tell you all about it. We're not the expert. But Tim is a meticulous collector, and he's got things from World War II here. He's got his identity card, his actual identity card here in the wallet. He's got the... thing you place on your fence to say it's like a little number plate to say that it's a National Emergency Services Warden, and he's got his little light to stop enemy aircraft seeing him as he's driving about the place. But this is just to tell you just how fabulous this guy is in terms of just storing all the memories. He's a sort of a living museum. He's even got money from World War II. Two in his wallet or whatever it is. But we're going to pass you over to Tim to speak.
Okay, you go for it, Tim.
Good morning. I just got to tell you about my experiences as a young fellow during the war. First World War, everybody was expected to get in and do their little bit. So my father was a warden, an air raid warden, whose job was to go around to the homes and point out if somebody had a light on or something, showing that they had to pull their curtains down. And my job was to get on the bike and ride as fast as I could up to a certain place and pass a message. Now, the big thing about this is you're not allowed to carry a written message. You had to have it in your head, because the theory was that if you were captured by the enemy, they could squeeze the information out of you, but they just had to read the paper and know exactly what was going on. So the idea was, if you'd had it in your head, you could say, "I know nothing." And that was the way it went. But I soon learned to do it that way.
Tim, don't want to break things up. Tim's got an absolute amazing memory. So perhaps that's from World War II. So this is the start of World War II. What year was it?
1942 mainly, 1940, 39 to 1945.
World War II was 1939 to 1945.
Yeah, World War II was 1939
to 1945. Yeah. And do you want to describe a bit about the some of the families and some of the work adventures?
Because as I just said, my father's job was to go around and walk around, and if there were any lights showing, he was to go in and make them extinguish the lights. And everything was taken seriously. The only thing I'm thankful of, even to this day, that we were never attacked, and I had to really do it, get right stuck into it. But I can assure you the exercises were very strict, and we had a director of up in the headquarters to direct operations, and you had to do everything spot on like the army. You had to do it exactly right, or you were out on your ear. So it was a very good experience for me. It taught me a lot in life.
And did you have any messages that you sent?
No, it's just that I was just going to tell you about this bike riding. Ride a bike in Glenbrook in 1942 was positive hell because you had potholes that would bury a bicycle, and you had to go it up as quickly as you could and get the message from point. They had people appointed for to take messages to the different places, and you had to go out fast as you could and get that message there and back. And of course, the person who gave the message had it written down, so he knew exactly what he said, so it could be double checked by that director that you were on the ball with your with your what you had in your head. So
I'll just describe for the overseas listeners some of the things here. Is that okay, Tim?
Is that okay? Describe a few things for the overseas audience.
For the overseas audience, the bicycle lamp. Mm. So it's a blue bicycle lamp, about 10 centimetres by 7 centimetres across, and it's got beautifully cut cardboard louvers on the front.
I made all that myself. So I did all that myself, so...
So that's Tim.
Handmade.
Tim made the louvers over the top, and it's still here from 1942, 43, and it's a little box. It hangs on your thing and
on the bike.
On the bike
clips onto the bike.
And on the back, there's a battery. There's a battery.
Yeah. Mm, yeah, it's a battery goes in there. I have a battery somewhere, but
I don't think anyone would have the batteries nowadays.
Yeah, no. Yeah, the idea of the louvers was to show the light down directly on the road so any aircraft overhead couldn't see the light. And most of the car headlights in that period were all fitted with these type of louvers.
Okay, and the other thing that Tim has here is a identity card. I feel almost unworthy to touch it. Can I describe it a bit?
I don't know if anybody else has got one of these, but I actually worked with my father, who was making war products, and... whether it had something to do with it, but I ended up having to sign this card and carry this card with me at all times. Now, the idea was that if you were approached by a police officer or an army officer or anybody in authority, you had to show them this card or you could get locked up. I signed at the back, and my father signed it. And
Can I describe it a bit?
It's just a piece of cardboard, actually.
A bit of cardboard.
It's a very official card.
Unfortunately, I don't have my glasses, but it's got civilian registration for British subjects, and it's got an identity card, and it's number 37711, and it says Timothy Alistair Myers, and the Cowdery Street here. It's if that's the one here, that's where we're here at the moment. And if not delivered within 14 days, return it to Bathurst. So if you notify any change of place of living on a particular form, and it's got an official stamp, and on the back of it, it's got identity cards signed by you on receipt, and you change your place, and it's got your signature at the back, signature holders, and official purposes required for official purposes, and a series of numbers, and it's still in excellent condition, I think, for someone. I feel bad touching it. And here's the original war wallet that came in with the word identity card.
That's Japanese.
And some Japanese and money.
This is what they call Japanese money that they were going to use. Yeah, they were going to use once they occupied various countries. This was called occupation money, and it became very common after the war for piles of this stuff to be around, because I guess it was captured in the islands, and the soldiers brought it back, and we used to play with it. There was that much of it around. It was unbelievable.
Well, actually, one of my father's employees went to war. He gave me those.
Yeah.
He brought them back. As Dennis said, he brought them back with him, so I've kept them.
And so where did he fight? What theatre did your father's friend fight in?
He was a work employee. He worked for my father. He went to New Guinea and he fought up in New Guinea.
And so this is a bit like Monopoly money.
He's had the idea that if they invited Australia, that they'd change over to their money.
Yeah.
But it never happened, thank goodness.
Yeah. Mm. Were there any incidents in Glenbrook while you're doing your duties that you can remember?
Oh, I didn't know. I remember getting... I got to know all the potholes by names.
And you say Glenbrook is very famous for being the home of the gas warfare in the tunnels. You say that has happened later in the war.
That happened later on. That happened in 40. Yeah, they a bit later. Anyway, it may have been there, but that's a different story. I have got it there somewhere. The tunnel was guarded and all that sort of thing, but I don't know much about that. I didn't have much to do with it when I was a young fellow.
Oh, right.
So, do you think we will wind it up for this one? 10 minutes, which is about the good length for a podcast. And we might settle down, have a cup of tea, do another podcast.
The only other thing I went to mention, I remember when I was a child, we used to have what we call stirrup pumps, which was a pump that you could put on the ground like a car stirrup pump, and you put the thing in a bucket of water and pump it, and you'd be able to put the fire out. I couldn't imagine these things being able to put out anything. They did work.
One out here still works in the garage.
And of course, there was the old gas mast that a lot of people had.
So, they've all perished by now.
Yeah, they've all gone. I've never seen an old gas mast laying around. But as Tim says, he's still got a stirrup pump. That's amazing.
This is the stirrup pump. I'm a young chap, but I'm not supposed to have war stories. But my, I'll just quickly do a war. My father and uncle were in Armidale, and they made a basket bomb, which is gunpowder and a wicker basket, and they put it down the old World War One cannon. So, what happened is that the Allies divided up the German war booty. And then they divided up all the weapons to every small town. So if you had a population, you got a machine gun.
We had a machine gun at Glenbrook, didn't we, Tim? We had a machine gun mounted up on the
It was a German machine
gun. Yes.
It was taken during the war and melted down for scrap.
That actually happened during the Second World War. A lot of the German stuff was melted down. But in Armidale, they had this cannon, and they put the basket bomb down it, and it went off, and it set off an air raid siren, and all the schools came out, and everyone got in their air raid shelters. So that's a small one. And I remember my father digging air raid shelters and being taught to put sand over incendiaries.
Just on air raid shelters, we had a communal air raid shelter in the yard next door to our place. We lived in Maribor, where it was quite sandy, and I can remember all the people coming down, digging this massive big hole in somebody's backyard and putting a roof over the top of it and covering it with sand, and that was a community air shelter, which was a great curry house for us kids. And so I can remember the air shelters very well.
Well, there you go. Okay, well, that's the end of World War II. We'll just have a bit of a break, and we might do something else or call it a day.
We had an air raid shelter up the school. I must admit it was very crudely built. It was just a trench with a corrugated iron over the top of it and covered in, and I don't know, I think that we'd all died of suffocation if it had blown up, because I think it was that badly made. It was made in a hurry by the parents, and we used to have air raid practice. The siren used to go off up the garage up there, and on the corner, and it'd go off, and you had to go out to them, get into line in the there was 6th, 5th, 4th, and 3rd class, so there were little ones there as well, and you had a buddy system where that little one had to get your hand and stay with you all the time while that air raid warning was on, and we'd go march down in line down into the shelter, and nobody ever rushed and panicked, and I'm just glad that the bomb a bomb never hit it, because I think I would have still been there with it.
I was only here in the 90s, but in the 90s whenever there was a fire, the air raid siren used to go off at the fire brigade. Is that, can you remember that?
The bushfire brigade station was taken over by the state fire brigade, and they use the same siren.
As the air raid siren, or it sounded like an air raid siren?
Air raid siren was put on the... We got it off the pole and put it... They took it off the pole and we put it around in the fire station.
Okay, so when I was... before, Dennis, you came here, there'd be an air raid siren in Glenbrook?
No.
This is in...
when Dennis came here, the new fire station had been built up in behind where you were.
Either I was hallucinating, but I remember in the middle of the night, I was just in the early 90s, you'd be in Glenbrook and there's... Okay, well, we'll have a bit of a break, may have a bit of a spot to eat or something like that, and then we might do another podcast. Brilliant. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.